Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank FY 2020 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Welcome to Fidelity full year 2020 results conference call. My name is Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. I am the Managing Director of Fidelity Bank PLC. As you probably know, the erstwhile MD, Nnamdi Okonkwo, retired in December 2020 following the expiration of his contract. We uploaded the investor presentation about 24 hours ago. I hope you've had time to go through the report. Before I dive into the numbers, I'd like to give an overview of my professional background and tell you my strategy for the bank. In a banking career spanning over 30 years, I've held senior managerial positions at functional levels in different financial institutions. I have worked in treasury, legal services, all areas of marketing, namely corporate, commercial, retail, and investment banking. I've been privileged to participate in structuring of complex transactions in different economic sectors, including commercial, oil and gas, aviation, real sector, and export. I was an integral part of the transformation agenda in Fidelity Bank, having worked as an executive director in charge of the Lagos and Southwest region. The strategy of the bank has not changed. Our goal is to achieve Tier 1 status by 2025. We define Tier 1 status as attaining 7.5% market share across key indices, including deposits, risk assets, and total assets. Achieving an ROE of 20% and a CIR of less than 60%. Build a customer base of not less than 15 million accounts. Increase digital penetration by over 90%. We have built all these on seven pillars that will help us drive our strategic aspiration in the coming years. The first is the brand refresh. To increase the top-of-mind awareness of Fidelity brand by external and internal stakeholders. The second is workforce transformation to create a future-proof bank supported by high-performing and empowered workforce. Thirdly, service excellence, which is intended to build brand loyalty through personalized and seamless customer experience delivery. The fourth is performance discipline to achieve a strong bank with strong fundamentals, good asset quality, and strategic cost management. In addition, digital transformation, which will involve an end-to-end digitization across all businesses, front, mid, and back office. Finally, achieve accelerated growth, which will drive aggressive marketing, market penetration, and business diversification. I would also like to introduce the factors that influenced our performance in the previous year. In 2020, the monetary authorities implemented an expansionary policy. Hence, the major focus of the regulators was increasing output growth in the domestic economy. The reduction of the benchmark interest rates from 13.5% to 12.5% and later on 11.5%, and a fall in the yield in government securities caused a realignment of rates on both sides of the balance sheet in the books of all deposit money banks. Our yield on earning assets decreased by 2.9% from 13.6% in 2019 to 10.7% in 2020. In the same period, the cost of funds reduced by 2.7% from 6.3% to 3.6%. The cumulative effect was a marginal increase in the net interest margin from 6.2% to 6.3%, which is higher than our guidance of between 5.5 and 6. The COVID pandemic obviously disrupted our operations. Quarter-on-quarter PBT was lower in quarter two at the height of the lockdown. Things, however, began to trend up towards quarter three. One of the palliative measures adopted by the CBN and other development agencies was the reduction of the net spread on intervention funds from an average of 7% to 4%. This adversely affected our profitability by about 23% of our risk assets were funded by intervention funds. On a brighter note, the pandemic gave us an opportunity to review our processes. The remote working arrangement and online meeting protocols meant that we spent less time on travel, training, premises maintenance, and related costs. Savings from the remote working of staff led to a significant decline of cost lines and cost savings of about 3 billion. The review of the bank charges by the CBN, which became effective January 2020, reduced allowable charges on a range of banking products, including income on electronic transfers. But despite the increase in the usage of our banking channels, our banking income, digital income decreased. The volume of our transaction on our instant banking increased by 78% year on year, while that of our mobile banking decreased by 37.5%. However, our digital income reduced by 19%. Regarding our financial performance, gross earnings dropped by 5.4% from 218 billion in 2019 to 206.1 billion in 2020 due to the combination of the following factors. Like we said, lower interest and similar income caused by lower yields in the market. Net fee income declined by 4.3 billion. However, key activity income lines like the account maintenance, digital income, trade income started trending upwards in quarter three and quarter four as the economy recovered. Trade increased by 48.4% between quarter two and quarter three, and by 23.4% between quarter three and quarter four. Account maintenance charge increased by 42% between Q2 and Q3, and by 12.4% between Q3 and Q4. Digital banking income increased by 20% between quarter two and quarter three, and 19.56% between quarter three and quarter four. Operating income increased by 14.8% to 128.5 billion, while the operating expense increased by 2% to close at 83.6 billion. The growth in operating expense was driven mainly by increase in the regulatory cost, but the year-on-year increase of 2% is a lot lower than the headline inflation rate of 15.75%. Cost-to-income ratio reduced to 65.1% in the review period from 73.4% in 2019 full year, because the growth in the net revenue of 16.8 billion far outweighed the growth in the OPEX of 1.6 billion. Operating profit before impairment, increased by 50.9% from 29.8 billion in 2019 to 44.9 billion. In the reporting period, we closed the period with a PBT of 28 billion, which translated to 7.6 drop compared to our 2019 PBT figures of 30.3 billion. The drop in PBT was in line with our guidance. In view of the pandemic, we modeled for a PBT drop of 15%. We increased our loan loss buffer for the period, which led to a higher cost of risk of 1.4%. This resulted in an increase in the total impairment charge of 16.8 billion from a write back of 0.6 billion in the previous year. We are maintaining a high buffer to ensure that our earnings are shielded from any relapse in the Global Scourge and its attendant effects on our business operations. Total deposits increased by 38.7% from 1.2 trillion in 2019 to close at 1.7 trillion in the review period. It was driven by the double-digit growth in all deposit classes. The demand deposits increased by 2.7%, savings deposits increased by 54.2%, tenor deposits increased by 55.1%. Going forward, we'll pay greater attention to our savings book by expanding our digital channels and increasing our agency banking footprint. We currently have 14,000 agents. Net loans and advances increased by 17.7% to close at 1.32 trillion. However, if we walk back the devaluation impact of 4.4%, the real growth was 13.3%. About 29.1% of the growth in the loan book was created with the on-lending and intervention facilities. As of December 2020, 42% of our loan books were foreign currency denominated and 41% in the preceding period. We think the government will continue to unlend to critical sectors of the economy, so we'll continue to grow our volumes on the intervention funds. We see opportunities for risk asset growth in the government through infrastructure development finance, manufacturing, as well as communication and technology. We will continue to expand our retail loan book through the issuance of point-of-sale facilities, payday loans, and other lifestyle products. Our NPL ratio, Stage 3 loans referring to here, came in at 3.8% from 3.3% in 2029. This is due to the 37% growth in absolute NPL book to 53.1 billion. Year-on-year NPL growth is partly due to our conservative stress test on sectors susceptible to global pandemic and economic lockdown. Coverage remains high at 139%, with specific provisions on Stage 3 loans currently at 68.9% versus 60.9% of 2019. The sectors with the highest NPL growth are the transport, general commerce, and public utilities. Other regulatory ratios remain above the required threshold. Our capital adequacy ratio is at 18.2% and liquidity at 37.8%. The newly 10-year 41.2 billion Tier 2 bond, which was priced at on 7th January 2021, will qualify as Tier 1 capital from H1 2021 audited financial statement. Impact on capital adequacy ratio is estimated to be about 200 basis points. Looking forward, we expect a semblance of normalcy in the local economy as the spread of the pandemic begins to be moderated following the distribution of the vaccines. We are committed to delivering higher growth numbers in the coming months, starting from our Q1 2020 result. And for 2021 full year, we have guided for 10 to 15% growth in our loan book, 15 to 20% increase in the total deposits, cost to income ratio of below 65%, an increase in our NIM, and a 25% growth in PBT, which will translate to an ROE of 12.2%. Thank you for your attention. We will now take questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if anyone would like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you wish to withdraw the question, you may press star and then two to remove yourself from the question queue. If anyone would like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. Our first question is from Tuyosi Oni of Renaissance Capital.
Hi, team, and thank you very much for taking my question. So my first question is your view FX environment. Yeah, we've seen an uptick in rates now, and I just wanted to get a sense of how Fidelity is looking at the remaining quarters of the year. The next set of questions I have are more asset quality driven. So I noticed that there was a notable quarter-on-quarter decline in your downstream book and in your manufacturing NPLs. Could you please speak on what drove this? I imagine it's write-offs, but I just wanted to confirm from you. And then you have a part of your NPLs that are classified as others, and this grew by about 10 billion year-on-year and 7 billion quarter-on-quarter. So I just wanted to get a sense of what exactly is in that bucket. The next question is on your provisioning. So in Q4, you took about 5.8 billion provision charge, which is quite similar to what you took in Q2, which was the height of the pandemic. And the general sense was that things had started to improve by the end of the year. So I just wanted to ask, what drove this increase in Q4 in provisions? And during the call, NECA spoke about in 2021 going into intervention loans from the government. I just wanted to get a sense of how these loans are being structured. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the CBN had granted, you know, moratoriums and rate cuts previously. So these new loans, at what rate is Fidelity going into it? Is there any sort of forbearance period for the obligors to start paying back? And then I just had a question on the robust digital strategy that was discussed at the beginning of the call. I understand that the intention of this is to drive growth at the bank, but I just wanted to get a sense of the impact on Fidelity's OPEX in the near to medium term. And then my final question is for guidance on your non-interest revenue for 2021. Thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. I'll take the first question. The first question is on the interest environment, our expectation in the, if I'm correct. Yes, since 2021, we have seen significant rise in the yields. The yields in government securities from both the debt and money market instruments. First-year treasury bills and OMO bills are now at 4.2% and 8.6% from 3.18% and 5.74% respectively. And the long end of the fixed income now is at about 11.8% from 8.25% in December. This trend shows us that we expect an uptick in the yields. And the reason why we believe that that is the case is that the trend is expected to continue based on the following indicators. There is need for us to, for the government to fund 2020 budget deficit of 5.2 trillion. And then the medium term management strategy accommodates new borrowing to fund the budget deficits with a bias for 70% of it being sourced in Naira. We also expect, we've also seen that there's an increasing preference for the FPIs to improve. And for the FPI by the government, for that reason, there's an improvement in the yields so that we can get some FX liquidity in the country will improve. So based on all that, we expect that the rates are going to go up. We are already seeing that, like I said, and like you're aware, there was also concerns about the inflation rate currently at 17.33, so it needs to be tamed. So we expect that the trend will continue, and we're also going to see a repricing of the risk assets if this because we expect this trend to continue to quarter two. So we also expect a repricing of the risk assets, especially in quarter two going into quarter three. Thank you.
Could you also please speak about your FX expectations for the year too?
In terms of FX expected, we expect FX to be. Yes, we do know that there's an expectation of a further devaluation because there's still a gap in the funding, as which you can see there's a little struggle on that. So we still expect a further devaluation, but I'll let my treasurer take that question further. Akin.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much. In terms of our outlook for the FX market, what we have seen so far, we have seen two major devaluations within the period, just within the first quarter. If you see where non-deliverable futures are, that's the forward that they sell as a hedge instrument, it will also give you an indication of what to expect those rates or where to expect those rates to be. If you look at those rates, for example, if you look at 3 months, say June is currently at 422, and if the market at either a new market is at 407, 408 for today, what it means is that with this expectation, it's very likely that there will still be some tick, you know, uptick in that situation. So from our own outlook, we believe that there will still be more to come in terms of the outlook. Again, too, yes, the government have been trying so much to stabilize. Just as Wendy said, we have seen what they have done on the FPI side, trying to, you know, up the rate on the naira risk. And as well, too, if you look at the direction that we have been seeing in terms of where the FPIs are, you know, they will need something to really give them some leeway just to be pushing. Given this, even the adjustment that was done around the remittances, I think that the unmet demand is still very much, and because of the mainstay that is still very uncertain in terms of the crude, we expect that this will tick up the rate further by expectations. Thank you.
Okay, the third question was on, if you correct me, was on the quarter two and quarter four provisioning for in our presentation.
Yes.
Hello. Okay. Yes, we are very conscious of the environment and the very unstable environment, and we're very aggressive on our position on our provisioning. As you well know, our total provisioning for the full year was 16.8 billion. But I will let my CRO take it. But you are aware that the provision also went up due to the FX rate increase as well. So I'll let my CRO take the question. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you? Am I audible? Can you hear me properly? I hope you can.
Yes.
Okay.
We can hear you.
Okay. The first question has to do with the downstream sector, where we had a reduction as at full year. Now, basically, we had a major write-off there, and that's what led to that reduction. This is a loan we had classified for more than a year, and we took that off, and that was about over 13 billion. On the manufacturing sector, we had an improvement. We had an improvement, as you can see, from the 11.7 as at Q3 to 3.2, and this was also mainly from one of our manufacturing obligors. The other sector relates to mainly one utility company, where in recognition of the impact of COVID, we decided to basically take on more impairment as a conservative measure in that particular sector. So that's the deviation, and of course, FX impact also contributed to some of these numbers. Thank you.
Yeah, the fourth question will be on our robust digital products. In 2019, we had a refresh on our digital platform and infrastructure, and it was a lifesaver in the pandemic because we were able to migrate most of our processes to the platform as well as to the cloud. We rolled out several products that ensured that our customers were able to do business end to end from their homes. But I'll let the CIO deepen this discussion around the digital products. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mecca. So, you also spoke about how it affects our cost base. For 2020, we had about 60% of our cost lines going down, lying on the digital strategy, number one, the remote working, and number two, because we have migrated more processes online. Now, how has that affected our cost? Going forward, CIR is down to 65% for 2020. Going forward, we expect it to be below 65% for this year, and in the next 3-4 years, we expect it to be below 60%. We're still making some additional investments in that. The 41 billion bond we issued, 18% of the proceeds goes into improving our technology infrastructure. So what you're likely to see is that there'll be more investment in that space, and then you'll see a gradual reduction in the CIR from the 65% levels to the 60% level in the next 3 years. Thank you.
Okay, the last question, if you correct me, Tony, so it was on NIR and the growth expectation. Yes, we think that things are improving. The business environment is improving. The economy is opening up. So we think that the NIR, which is the income that comes from non-interest revenue, is going to increase with the recovery of the business activity in since quarter four. We can see from since quarter four. Non-interest revenue, as you well know, is driven by activity from income and income from activity loans and all other ancillary businesses. So with the economy opening up, we're expecting a higher non-interest revenue. And we're booking more loans and business activity has improved significantly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there was one question that I asked that wasn't answered, and it was on the nature of the intervention loans that you spoke about. So I just wanted to ask how you were looking at these new loans, given the current moratoriums on existing loans and the cuts in interest rates that the CBN implemented in 2020, and if this would affect these new loans that you're going into, and consequently what it means for your margins.
When we go into intervention loans, I can tell you, we don't, the margins are important, but the bigger income is coming from the ancillary business around those customers. What we have seen is that our customers that we intervene for, their businesses tripled in the last 1 or 2 years. So we have to, and we have to also talk about the real sector fund. And that fund is releasing our CRR. You know, for our CRR is at 0% interest. But anytime you lend to the real sector, it's funded from our CRR. So it's a gain for us as well. So you're gaining on two sides of the coin. One, you're earning income on the CRR, and then you're earning interest revenue on the CRR, which ordinarily would have been zero. And then you are also lending to the real sector and growing the business of our customers who are happy to borrow at this rate. In any case, we just lend to them. There are no new moratoriums for the new loans. But two things I have said here, we enjoy the CRR income and interest on the CRR, which ordinarily wouldn't have interest. And then we grow the business of our customers because these are real sector businesses. And we choose the customers that we lend to in this space very carefully. It has to be a customer that has ancillary business. Ancillary business. Thank you. And multiple income streams. Thank you, Tamisha.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Jerry Nabue of Cardinal Stone.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you for this call. I just have a few questions, and then some of them are follow-up. First and foremost, you gave a guidance of about a 25% jump in PBT for 2021. Can you maybe just drive or drill down in terms of what the key drivers would be for this jump in PVT, especially given what we were seeing last year. And I'm also being very particular about the potential FX, seeing more than 2x jump in FX earnings, and then in 2021, we may not see devaluation of the kind of quantum that we saw last year. So how do you make up for that kind of gap while also ensuring that you grow last year's performance by over 25%? Secondly, I also want to ask on the credit side of things, in relation to what we're seeing in the yield environment, are you repricing your lending rates accordingly? And if you're doing that, how responsive or receptive to that have customers been? And also the third one in that regard would be, how would you assess the credit environment also? Is it better than what we saw last year in the COVID year, or do you still see some of the concerns or the scars of COVID that are, you know, that's not making lending conducive at the moment? So are we seeing a better environment for lending? You know, Q1, based on your assessment of Q1 performance, you know, where was loan growth really good in terms of overall expectations? For asset quality, you know, cost of risk, are you going to maintain the same kind of posture, aggressive posture that you had last year, given the overall environment in terms of provisioning? So would you still be aggressive, or you feel that you've been very aggressive last year, so you can take things a bit more slower this year in terms of the quantum of provisioning that you expect to I think, and then again, if you can also let us know what your restructured loans, so about total loans, how much of your loans are restructured, that would be helpful as well. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Your first question was on the 5% PBT growth. If you remember from the intro that I did, I guided for 10% growth in risk assets and the 25% growth. 20 to 25% growth on our loan, on our deposits. We achieved the 38% growth on our deposit last year, so that shows that we can achieve it. I mean, we achieved the 17.7% growth in our loan book last year, which shows that we can achieve these numbers that we guided. And if you remember, we made a provision of 16.8 billion for our MPL provisioning, and if you add that back to our existing PBT, to well over 44 billion. So we are not worried about 25% growth in PBT. We think we can drive it, and we also intend to reduce our cost of risk by the several processes we have put in place. And we play in the commercial sector, so the pricing is easier for us to reprice. We play with, if you know, I'm sure you know, Fidelity is very strong with the SMEs and commercial, so we're able to manage the pricing with them, with our customers. It's more difficult to manage the pricing and increase pricing with the very big corporates, but our strength is in the commercial. We intend to increase and optimize our balance sheet. What do I mean by that? We have been able to achieve a 3.6% low cost of fund. I mean, cost of funds. We're going to try to keep it at that. It's going to tick up, no doubt, but we have been able to maintain a NIM of 6.3%, even in the COVID period. So if we maintain all of that and we grow our business, we are certain that we'll be able to do 25%. So with improved environment of trade, we'll also increase our FX income. And we've done quite a bit on our own on the export side to increase our income on to increase our FX flow from exports. We have a lot of export customers, so we're using that to fund and to sell to our customers in the commercial space. So that's been of great help. You know, so with the cost savings embedded from the COVID-19 and the operational restructure that we're going through right now, as we speak, we're working with consultants to ensure that we have staff optimization and to continue to sustain the benefits of COVID remote banking process that we went through during the lockdown. We want to make sure that we don't lose sight of what we gained. We're ensuring that we're working with consultants, like I said. So we're going to continue to bring down our costs. So if we bring down our costs and increase our top line revenue, I'm confident that we'll achieve 25% PBT. And then going by what I'm seeing in my first quarter, I think it's very achievable. Thank you. And the second question was on our customer base and increasing of the lending rate. I already spoke to that by saying that we are stronger in commercial than in the big corporates. So to adjust our rates upwards, to tick it upwards, we were not very aggressive in bringing down the rates. That's another thing to say. But however, we did adjust. But to also take it up again, we would have to do that in the if not second quarter, by the third quarter. But because of the place where we play, it's a little easier to deal with it, the repricing, because of the commercial sector segment where we play majorly as an SME bank. And the fourth question was like, what are we seeing in the market? We're seeing a lot of growth. We're seeing a lot of growth in the retail loans, because of the digital outplay that we have launched. We are seeing a lot of growth in technology area. We are seeing a lot of growth in manufacturing. We are seeing a lot of growth in education. We are seeing a lot of growth in infrastructure. As we speak, we are very big on infrastructure lending, and there are very big opportunities coming our way. As a matter of fact, quarter one was very good in terms of the growth on all the indices, because I think the economy is truly opening, and for us, from what you are seeing, the numbers are going to look good. And the health sector also came through with a lot of very good credits. So the yields this quarter will be good, and going forward, and like I said, the 25% PBT is very achievable. So the first question was on the yields. Like I said, the third question was on the yields. Yes, we would be able to achieve the same yields that we did, because like I said earlier on, even though the deposit rates are increasing a little bit, we're also going to reprice our lending rates. And like I said to you earlier on, because of the segment where we play, we have the advantage of being able to reprice. We won't be such a big problem repricing our loans with our customers. But I'll have Bola Hot take more on the issue of the PBT guidance.
Thank you, Neka. So, Jerry, if you look at our total earning assets, it's about 1.8 trillion. Now, based on our guidance of 10% to 15%, which Neka spoke about, if you take 10% of that, you get about 180 billion. Now, even if you look at the lower end of our NIM guidance, which is 6%, if you take 6% of that, that throws up an income of about an additional 10 billion. Even if we keep non-interest revenue flat, which we plan to grow by 5 to 10%, operating income will already get to almost 139 billion. And because we expect CIR to be below 65% and a lower cost of risk, if you just model that, just with the lower end of our guidance, you already arrive at over 35 billion. So we think it's very achievable, as Neka said, even using the most conservative bit of our guidance. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Paul. But if I may, in terms of funding for the growth of the interest earnings assets, I know last year we saw, banks generally were able to grow their funds, because of the significantly low yield environment that we're in, right? So it was easy for banks to grow their funds, and that supported assets, interest earnings assets. But this year we're seeing some sort of reversal. Do you expect that kind of funding, or the kind of quantum that we saw last year, that would justify a very strong growth in interest earnings assets for this year?
Okay. Yes, we still expect that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, we still expect that. What we've seen in quarter one, and we've seen the NIMs hold up pretty strong. Yes, interest rates have gone up from a fixed income perspective, which impacts our time deposit book. But if you look at our time deposit book, it's less than 25% of our total deposits. And then the other term funding that we have, they are not susceptible to interest rate movement. So, for example, the long-term borrowings we have, the euro bond we have, those ones, they are not affected by the movement in interest rates. So from what we see from a quarter one perspective, we think an NIM is likely to increase for us, and that's why we've guided from 6 to 6.5% this year, even though we did 6.3% last year. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe to add as well is that, you know, the relationship is not really linear because only the non-borrowing customers can buy T-bills and government bonds. You know, so it means that the pool of customers that we still have to be with us in the normal deposit rate. So the rising yields are a challenge, quite all right. But offering customers higher rates will ensure that they remain with Fidelity. But in all of that, we expand our service offerings to ensure the loyalty of our customers and to sustain what we have to do. And remember, we just recruited a new CIO and a lot of digital play that we're going into. All that will generate some level of deposit somehow. So in the last 3 years, we've grown our deposits at the average rate of 30% per annum. So what we've targeted this year is very achievable, going by the, even if we take into consideration that fact that it may slow down due to the rates that are ticking up, or due to the fact that they are going to be able to invest in other products, we're still guided for lower growth as opposed to what we've achieved year on year. So somewhere in between all of that, we'll find a balance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Babatunde Ogunleye of SBG Securities.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call. Apologies if some of my questions have been answered. I got caught up during the call. Just a quick question on the digital banking revenue. So you're guiding a 90% penetration rate, and there's a regulation concerning open banking initiative by the CBN. So given the open banking initiative, I'm expecting that this is going to drive competition in the sector. So how do you see this 90% penetration rate coming into play? And also on the back of that has been the recent tussle between the telcos and the banks on USSD charges, because I believe USSD do have a high volume transaction, and with USSD you can easily increase your penetration rate. And then given this impact of the end user billing and the debt owed to telcos, if you could speak on the impact on this and how it's going to affect you achieving the 90% penetration rate for digital banking. And my second question is going to be on your outlook on the interest rate environment. And I'm expecting that given the rise in interest rates, I'm expecting your cost of funding should also go up as well. So probably if you could give a guidance as to what we should be expecting for cost of funding and for 2021, basically. And the final question is going to be on your asset quality. So I noticed there was an increase in stage one and stage three loans. So you could basically speak to us to what is driving that loan, and also given the impact of the regulatory forbearance, like what percentage of the loan book were restructured and in what particular sector were these loans restructured? Thank you.
Okay, I'll start from the last question. 35% of our loan books were restructured following the government's forbearance, but I'll leave it to my CRO to give the details of the sectors. Thank you. Kelvin.
Okay. Thank you very much, Neka. With respect to the sectors that we had the restructuring, we have quite a bit in intervention funds, and intervention funds are largely from a largely public sector-based interventions. And so we had a lot of restructuring there. We also had some in oil and gas, oil and gas upstream, which of course you know the COVID affected so much of that sector. We also did restructuring in power. Then, of course, you know the general forbearance and that CBN gave on retail loans. So quite a bit of that also happened. Manufacturing also, and transport. Those are some of the other areas that we did some restructuring by way of sectoral distribution. But overall, that's 35% roughly of our loan book that was restructured. And
the next question was on our digital banking penetration. And yes, so to speak to that, our digital banking penetration rate as we speak in 2020 was 88% of we were able to achieve 88% of our transactions on our digital channels. So, and that is in proportion to transactions that our transactions. So achieving a 90% of that is not difficult, as you can well see. We have done that successfully, and we have improved on all our platforms. We have migrated more of our processes to the cloud, and we've had to improve with the lockdown. So I think it's very achievable and it's easy to achieve. So I'll allow the CIO to speak to the numbers.
So, thank you, Neka. So yes, right now we're doing about 88% of our transactions on the digital channel. Now, in terms of the customers we have who are using our digital channel, our mobile and internet banking, we have about 52% of our customers using that. So out of about 5.7 million customers, we have about 3 million customers using the channels. Now, we intend to grow that customer base to about 15 million. That means we're going to bring in about 10 million new customers. Obviously, for this new set of customers, we expect a very high penetration ratio. If we can achieve about 90% penetration ratio on the new customers we're bringing, that already takes us to about 85% penetration ratio. So, as we improve the penetration ratio, it will also increase the number of transactions that are being done on the digital channel. Competition from the fintechs, yes, we acknowledge that. They are much stronger in certain areas, but we've done a lot of collaboration with the fintechs. We've collaborated with the fintechs from a lending perspective, from a payment system perspective. So it's not in all areas that we compete with the fintechs. And in some areas, we collaborate with them. And we intend to continue that collaboration. We have a digital lab where we sort of work with them on building new ecosystems. So we're confident that with all that, we'll be able to achieve both penetration rate from a customer perspective and then on the number of transactions we do on the digital channel. And that's part of the reason why we're guiding for a lower CIR over the next 3 years. Thank you.
Just to add, we recently employed and set up a chief digital officer. That's to show you the focus that we have in this segment of our business. And we employed a CDO and a CTO. So that's to show you the focus we have on this segment of our business, and all the numbers that we put there are achievable. Thank you. There was another question on asset quality. We closed with a 3.8% on our NPL. That's a good ratio, and we are guiding for about same next year. I mean 2021. So I'll let the CRO speak to this, to the specific segments that make up this 3.8% and the quality of our assets. For sure, the quality of our assets are very high. Our asset quality is very high. We ensure that we lend our FX portfolio to only FX customers with FX revenue receivables. We also ensure that we don't lend to customers that don't have deep experience in what they're doing. Overall, The decline of our NPL over the years, in the last 5 years, shows that a good job is being done on the asset quality, and we intend to keep it at that. So I would like the CRO to deepen this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Meka. We had a growth in our stage one loans, riding on the back of the growth of the general loan book itself. You may recall that we said we had a growth of 17.7% thereabouts in the loan book, of which 13% was from just basic growth, and then the other balance was from devaluation. So that led to that growth that you see in our stage one book. Stage three is all driven by the conservative approach we adopted this year, riding on the back of the impact of COVID-19. And that's why we had a net increase, as we discussed much earlier, the cost of we were pretty aggressive on impairment this year because of our view on COVID. So net, the loan book grew by 215 billion. 194 billion of that came from stage one, 6.7 in stage two, and then 14.4 in stage three, of which the bulk of it is in the transport sector, as we've mentioned earlier, general commerce, and then the utility company that we also have to take some extra impairment on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Olusunde, do you have any other questions?
That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you. I would also like to state that we have no further questions on the line. Nneka, ma'am, do you want to make any closing comments?
Oh, okay, fine. Thank you very much. Thank you once again for participating on this call. Over the years, Fidelity has reported strong growth across all key indices. In our over three decades of existence, we have never failed to pay dividend. The dividend yield on our share in the last financial year was among the top two in the industry. I want to assure our esteemed stakeholders that we will sustain this trajectory in the coming months. We will innovate and disrupt using technology as a leveler. Thank you very much for making our time to attend this call. If you do require additional information, please reach out to our investor relations team. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.